Welcome to the Jim Bohannon Show from the Dial Global Radio Networks. We're at 1-866-50-JIMBO, 1-866-50-5426. And online, you'll find us at jimbotalk.net. There have been any number of civilizations which have fallen. You think back to some of the ones we learned about in history, the Sumerians and the Babylonians and certainly ancient Persia, Greece, Rome, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And people have for some time now been wondering if maybe our civilization is on the verge. A lot of people are concerned about trends and tendencies that they see. And we're going to talk tonight with a man who certainly, shall we say, has strong concerns about that. He is Larry Kelly, marketing consultant and to technology companies and a freelance writer. His work has been published in places such as the San Francisco Chronicle, Human Events, and Town Hall Magazine. And he has written the book Lessons from Fallen Civilizations. It's in paperback from Hugo House Publishing and subtitled Can a Bankrupt America Survive the Current Islamic Threat? Good to have you on the program, Larry.
Thank you very much, Jim, for having me on.
Right off the bat, I'm sure people, some who've seen the subtitle, would say, oh, current Islamic threat, oh, he's an Islamophobe, oh, he's a right-wing wacko. In point of fact, for people who have not really looked into it, perhaps you should be aware of the fact that there is an Islamic threat. It does not come from every single person of that faith on the planet, but it certainly comes from a significant number of people who are pretty open in terms of their websites and the like about their desire to establish the new caliphate, another term that you ought to get to know. And so there are certainly reasons why that's a genuine concern.
Yes, there is. Your listeners might have, in watching Fox, their go-to person on Fox for internal terrorism inside the U.S. is a woman by the name of Catherine Herridge. I quote her in the book. And her new book, The Next Wave, she explains in very good detail that the next waves of attacks are not going to be from outside the country, like in 9/11, where the attackers were mostly from Saudi Arabia. They're going to be indigenous Muslims. And to put that in perspective, she explains in the end of her book, The Next Wave, she says that the FBI is interdicting a plot on average, once every 2 weeks inside the United States.
Really? Every 2 weeks? That's
right. We had
pretty
one,
amazing.
Yeah, we the one that was most recent, which everybody has kind of heard about, is the fellow was going to blow up the Federal Reserve. He thought he had 100 pounds of explosives and. Yeah. And so on.
But everyone we hear, I'm sure there are a good many that we don't hear
about. Of course.
About.
Very much so.
And while, again, as we note and do, in fact, stipulate that this does not represent every single person of the Islamic faith on the planet, but it represents a significant portion of them, a significant minority, and they really don't mince too many words about it. It's not like they're being all that subtle. Sometimes you see people who talk out of both sides of their mouths. Like maybe we'll have to wait and see what this is, whether this is the case or not. But the current president of Egypt, I'm not too sure that whether the Muslim Brotherhood is being totally candid with us. But when they're speaking to their own people, they can be at times extremely and frighteningly candid. So it is a problem. Now then, when you refer to a bankrupt America, you're not referring, I guess, just to our financial plight, are you?
Yes, I am, Jim. Oh, okay. A lot of people have asked me, when you look, I look at, what I do is I tell you as my reader about what happens in the fall of five great civilizations. That would be Greece, Carthage, Rome in the West, Constantinople or Rome East, also referred to as the Byzantine Empire, and the Ottoman Empires. I show you what happens when they fell. I bring out 10 immutable principles that can be seen to repeat, not in all, but in many, many of the falls of these civilizations.
We should note, of course, that in referring to the Ottoman Empire, which, by the way, fell apart less than a century ago, the end of World War I.
That's right.
That was an Islamic empire. It was as close, I suppose, to a new caliphate as we've had in modern times. There was, of course, a time at the very height of the Islamic sweep through Africa and Asia and Europe, when people may forget this, but of course one of the great battles of European history was the battle at the gates of Vienna in Austria, which in fact turned back the tide of expansion by the Muslim faith. People forget that one of the reasons why it took a while for Spain to get the money together to send Christopher Columbus off to discover America was the fact that the Spanish had just managed to free the entire Iberian Peninsula, Spain and Portugal, from Islamic domination. In point of fact, that same wave had gone as far as, I guess, about halfway through France. This was all Islamic territory. People, for some reason, our history books don't teach us that.
That's right, Jim. As a matter of fact, at the Battle of Vienna, which occurred in 1683, that was the high point of Islamic conquest of Europe. The Ottoman Empire ruled a large portion of Europe. That's another thing that people aren't aware of. And in 1683, the Battle of Vienna occurred on September 11th. And that is the reason a lot of people don't understand, don't know this, but those in the Muslim world know. That's why bin Laden picked September 11th. That was the high water mark for Islam's domination of the infidel.
1-866-50-JIMBO is our number, 1-866-505-4626, with our guest Larry Kelly, the author of the book Lessons from Fallen Civilizations. We're going to get into those various lessons. Is there anything about the fall of the Ottoman Empire that differs from the other empires that you cover, which were principally of European and, time allowed, ultimately Christian-influenced civilizations? Greece, of course, pre-Christian, Carthage pre-Christian, Rome west and east very much became Christianized, and then you had an Islamic empire. Did the fall of the Ottomans differ significantly from the other four?
Well, yes.
They lasted. The Ottomans lasted a lot longer.
That's a good point.
Constantinople lasted until 1453, and the Ottomans till 1918.
That's correct. You cited one of the main differences. That's the only empire that I profile that was not what we would consider Western. They did control a large portion of the West, as we just described. So, I mean, the difference would be it's the only civilization that I'm profiling that it would be Islamic. And each civilization fell for some of the same reasons. There were repeating trends, and these the 10 immutables that I cite in the book, and not all 10 repeat in every civilization. But I would say that the Ottomans differed in the sense that they made a conscious effort not to expand their knowledge base. Of the other four, I don't find that. They believed that they needed to, when they lost, began to lose their empire, when they began to lose battles, they said to themselves they had become too westernized, and they wanted to go back to the Quran. They wanted to, in a sense, limit their knowledge. And I didn't find that in any of the other ones that I studied.
I note that you didn't include the Chinese empire, which also people forget that at one point they built ocean-going ships that would have dwarfed the Nina, the Pita, and the Santa Maria, the Columbus's three ships. They built monstrous sailing ships and did so about a century to half a century before Columbus. And had they continued on their path, would almost inevitably have discovered across the Pacific Ocean, Australia, South America, and North America. And then at some point, and I've never had this fully explained to me, the Chinese essentially said, that's it. Okay, we're gonna turn inward. No more of this outward stuff. And, of course, from that point on, they entered a period of centuries and centuries and centuries of decline and ultimate subjugation by the West. Mm-hmm. You did not include the Chinese.
I didn't. I just did those five, Jim. And then the final third of the book is the rise of militant Islam and what we can do about it.
I'm going to come back, and we're going to start by going down this list of immutable laws governing the fall of civilization. Some of these may well sound familiar to you, and if that troubles you, then perhaps it should. 1-866-50-JIMBO is our number, 1-866-505-4626, as we talk with Larry Keller, Kelly. He is the author of Lessons from Fallen Civilizations. Perhaps we should learn. Perhaps we can learn enough, fast enough, to keep from joining the list. It is in paperback from Hugo House Publishing. We'll be right back. Good to have you with us on the Jimbo Hannon Show at 1-866-50-JIMBO, 1-866-505-4626. Lessons from Fallen Civilizations. Wow, do we need to learn those? Could be. Larry Kelly, our guest, is the author of this book, and we're going to go down a few of these lessons here. There are 10 immutable laws governing the fall of civilizations. Number one, no nation has survived once its citizenry ceased to believe its culture worth saving. You refer to this as Hansen's Law. Why?
Right after 9/11, the book is my response to 9/11. I've been working on it for 10 years. And I think I was like a lot of Americans, Jim. I remember driving to work on September 12th, and I said to myself, What will happen next? What are the follow-on attacks? How many are out there? Can we be taken down by this civilization? Suddenly, you know, it dawned on me that, you know, we were at war. And then I read an article by a fellow by the name of Victor Davis Hanson, hence Hanson's Law. And he wrote this. He said that war is not simply a material struggle, but it is often a referendum of the spirit. No nation has ever long survived when its nation found its culture not worth saving.
How can we determine that? I'm wondering, in such a polyglot of culture as this one, there are people, certainly, for example, if you just look at the United States, for example, there are people whose thoughts on our culture being worth saving who go all the way from people who passionately believe that it must definitely be saved and would give their lives for it all the way down to people who couldn't care one way or the other. So I'm not sure that it's easy to reach what you could consider to be a consensus here, since it covers the whole spectrum.
No, it isn't. And what Hanson was referencing there was the fall of Greece at the Battle of Chaeronea in 338. The Macedonians, Philip II and his son, the Alexander the Great,
yeah,
were able to conquer the Athenians' army and one other city-state. Only two city-states, Jim, came out to fight the Macedonians. 100 years earlier, our listeners probably many of them saw the movie 500,
yeah,
the battle where the Spartans held off the yeah, million man. Persian army?
Yeah.
Well,
the 300.
They 300, sorry. Yeah. The Greek city-states were able to repulse an army that was a million men 100 years earlier. In one battle, 100 years later, they gave up. They essentially ceded their civilization, the great civilization that we know of, that brought us things such as astronomy, of course, the rule of law, the notion that the many should rule the few, all those things that the Greeks gave us, that magnificent culture, they essentially were ready to abandon.
And so it was only a century that separated the great fight from the giving up.
That's correct.
Which in terms of history, of course, is like yesterday.
Right. So what does that mean to us? And what I say is that there are many examples where a civilization simply can't field an army. The invaders are essentially invited in. Case in point would be when we invaded Afghanistan shortly after 9/11. I have a description of it comes from a book called The Horse Soldiers, and we dropped a bunch of Navy SEALs into the Northern Alliance and teamed up with a bunch of guys that were fighting the Taliban. And in one battle, our guys noticed that the onrushing Afghan army that was the Taliban army were falling face forward in the dirt, and they were actually being shot in the back by the Taliban, who were really not even Afghan. They were foreigners. They were Chechens, Saudi Arabians, and others. And the Afghans that they had conscripted were actually attempting to run away and had to be shot in the back. Point being is they didn't want to defend the Taliban regime.
Now, your rule number two, immutable laws governing the fall of civilizations. In battle, free men will almost always defeat slaves. The Herodotus law.
Yeah, Herodotus, and in talking about the invasion by the Persians that was depicted in the movie 300, he traveled the Mediterranean about 20 years after the repulse of the Persian army, trying to find out. He's considered history's first historian. He was the first person to actually try to find out the cause and effect in history. Mm-hmm. There were chroniclers before him, but he was the first person to do that. And he traveled the Mediterranean to determine how could such a smaller army defeat such a larger army. And what he found out was that nearly always free men will defeat slaves.
Is there a point to that qualifying word, almost always?
Of course.
Which would be, I mean, for example, maybe the exceptions are instructive.
Right. I mean, if you're outnumbered, by some astronomical number,
sure.
Of course.
Okay.
That would be
the only application of that. All right. Rule number three, the immutable laws governing the fall of civilizations. Appeasement of a ruthless outside power always invites aggression. Treaties made with ruthless despots are always fruitless and dangerous. Interesting, or at least if you take them on their face value, it could be argued that Stalin gained something from his non-aggression pact with Hitler in that it bought him some time to rebuild the Soviet army he had personally decimated by firing all the generals back in the 30s. So it did have that benefit. But, of course, Hitler was under no illusions that the treaty actually meant what it said. Or Stalin, I should say, was under no such illusion.
Right. And I think our listeners would probably understand this pretty well. The most famous case in point, obviously, is Neville Chamberlain's
Peace
in Our Time, and it became very apparent in a short amount of time after that that was what inspired Hitler to believe that the British could be had, and that the time to strike was now. And one thing I'd like to draw your attention to also in that immutable is the word ruthless.
Yeah.
I have in the book a description of this. It's not completely understood that small ruthless bands of thugs have always preyed upon larger civilizations and been able to take them over.
All right, now then, we will pause at that point. We'll come back and look at that particular aspect of these when we return. Back to the Jim Bohannon Show, as we may be treading on your comfort zone a bit tonight, if you are particularly complacent about the future of Western civilization, the American variety in particular. This is not Apocalypse Now or Armageddon around the corner, but it certainly is, at the very least, as you read some of these immutable laws governing the fall of civilizations, you realize that Larry Kelly has a few points. Particularly, of course, appeasement of a ruthless outside power always invites aggression, a lesson that apparently has to be learned over and over and over and over and over again by those naive fools out there who are convinced that deep down everybody's really reasonable. No, they're not. All right. Now then, the fourth of these immutable laws: if a people cannot avoid continuous internal warfare, they will have a new order imposed from without. Explain that, please.
Well, in the fall of the Roman Empire of the West, while the empire was running out of money, while the Germans were invading across the Rhine and Danube, the Romans of the West, the western side of the empire, continued to have their armies, their field armies, name a usurper, it was called, as the new emperor, and civil wars continued on right up until the time that the empire collapsed. The date for the collapse of the Roman Empire of the West is 476 A.D., but it had been only a tiny rump a civilization for about 70 years because the amongst all the other problems that it had, it couldn't stop its own civil wars, its own fighting from within.
Mm-hmm. By that time, the Roman Empire, as we knew it at its peak, had really declined, and they were, in fact, Rome on several occasions was sacked by the Visigoths, right?
Rome was sacked for the first time in 410 A.D. for the first time in 800 years.
But then they lasted another 66 years.
Yes, exactly. But, yeah. They were sacked once again, but yeah. it was, think of the Roman Empire of the West as a bathtub full of water, and in its last days, it was literally, there was just a small puddle that was draining out, disappearing.
Rule 5, when a citizenry through taxation is deprived of its ability to acquire wealth and property, collapse is presaged. Have there been others that have faced this particular challenge? I guess I'm not that much of a historian.
Rome as well. What happened was their tax base began to disappear when the average citizen during the empire's heyday, when it was expanding and strong, the average small farmer or merchant would have to pay in taxes what he could produce in about 2 days out of the month. As time wore on, that became his tax burden would take up almost everything that he had. Oftentimes, the armies were turned against the citizenry, and to collect what they could. And if there was no money to give, they would confiscate their cow or his chickens. So the empire essentially collapsed, and each of these, by the way, Jim, my treatment of these going through my civilizations, I also have a modern corollary. Today, what I found is one of the most common features of a collapsing civilization is that the middle class is destroyed. I don't use the word in the book middle class because I think it's a little imprecise.
I was going to say I'm not sure that in some cases these particular civilizations you studied had what would be necessarily identifiable as a modern middle class,
right?
Which is more or less a product of the Renaissance, I think.
Yeah, I don't actually use that term in talking about the civilizations in the past. However, today, you know, you'll hear Barack Obama talking about how he wants to work for the middle class and have the rich just pay a little bit more. But in fact, what is happening is because the cost of our government is now so unaffordable, where for every $11 we spend, we only take in $7 and $4 of fiat money. At some point, with inflation and a thousand other small levies and penalties and fees, the middle class is going to be destroyed if we do not turn this around and make government affordable.
Okay. Law number 6, to hold territory, a state must be populated by those loyal to the central authority. When immigration overwhelms assimilation, the fall is presaged. Now we're starting to tread on a few nerve endings here, aren't we?
Yes, and you were absolutely correct, Jim, in citing the one of the other factors that led to the fall of Rome in the West is they, in 379, a huge army of Goths asked to be admitted into the empire. They were actually being forced out of their migratory lands by the Huns. So the Romans allowed them in and then found that they, and instead of what they had done during their heyday, when they Romanized, the brilliance of the Roman Empire was that they could Romanize their citizens. That is, get them to assimilate, even though they had been conquered in a generation, and sometimes less, People wanted to be Roman when the Roman Empire was at its peak. When the Goths came in, they allowed them to retain their language, retain their own colors, their own rulers, their own generals.
And they weren't Roman,
and they didn't go Roman.
That one ought to strike home really hard for a lot of people. Although I'm sure that there are many who would try to ignore it.
And those Goths then became a band of roving marauders that moved out of northern Thrace into Italy and ultimately sacked Rome.
Why, you cultural imperialist, you? That's just the catchphrase that would be aimed at that today by the people who are doing their very best to see to it that the United States falls prey to immutable law number 6. Law number 7, with the loss of fiscal solvency comes a loss of sovereignty. Okay, I can certainly see how the two would be related. Is it a given one automatically leads to the other?
Right. We are going to be able to hold territory only because we can defend it. And if people have asked me, you know, they'll say, you know, hey, Larry, what's your book about? And I tell them, and they say, well, okay, fallen civilization, are we doomed, or something along those lines, Jim? And what I say is this: you cannot have a world-class welfare state and a world-class military, based on my reading of history. You might have neither, but you can't have both.
Although, has anybody really tried that? I mean, the welfare state as we know it is a relatively recent invention that goes back maybe a little over a century. I guess the British, as much as anyone, invented it. I mean, was anyone really running what could be called a modern welfare state back in the empires that you mentioned, Greece,
right,
Carthage, Rome, West, Rome, East, and the Ottoman?
Right. In a sense, they were. The Romans and the Ottomans, all the money was flowing to the elite at the expense of everyone else. So the welfare state in the past was where you had a kind of a kleptocracy going on, and those of the privileged were able to essentially abscond with almost all of the money from the classes below them.
And law number 8, the debasing the currency always destabilizes the governing authority. Well, I would think that would be a given, but apparently some people don't seem to recognize that. In fact, there seems to be a current view that it's impossible to debase the currency, that the sound dollar is almost a God-given right. There's nothing we can do that will undercut it. Really?
Yes. As a matter of fact, in 1971, the gold was $35.
Okay, that was an artificial peg.
Yeah. And today it's $1,700. That's at a collapse of 96% in that period.
More to come. Stay with us on the Bohannon Show. Larry Kelly, our guest, and the book is Lessons from Fallen Civilizations. I think some of these are rather uncomfortable myself. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Jim Bohannon Show at 1-866-50-JIMBO, 1-866-505-4626, as we talk with Larry Kelly, author of Lessons from Fallen Civilizations. We're down to the last two here. Immutable law number 9. When a civilization accepts the propaganda of its enemy as truth, it has reached the far side of appeasement and capitulation is nigh. We're not really accepting the propaganda of our enemy, are we? In this case, since we're concerned about militant Islam, I don't know that we really buy into that, do we? Mostly, I think the people who aren't listening to what you're trying to say are people who would ignore that threat, not to say that, I think it's great that we return to the Dark Ages and subjugate women and all that and religious minorities, are they?
Well, this whole notion of the Arab Spring came from the West, who wanted to believe so much in the notion that the uprisings were going to bring about a quest for democracy as we understood it, and failed to understand that that Morsi, for example, that the new head of Egypt, who is a senior member of the Muslim Brotherhood, has already said that he wants to, he is in favor of releasing the blind sheikh. The blind sheikh is considered a hero in Egypt. If your listeners will probably remember, he's the guy who was convicted for having attempted to blow up the Trade Center in 1993.
The first time around.
Yeah. He's considered a hero. We want to believe that the Muslim populations of these countries are just like us. It's a propaganda play that they're willing to allow us to assume that to be the case, and it simply isn't. I can give you another example. The Lockerbie bomber, Jim, you might remember him. He was the guy that blew up the plane over Lockerbie, Scotland, killed everybody on board, even killed people in the little village of Lockerbie in Scotland, probably killed about 300 infidels. He was released by the Scottish and British authorities to his home in Libya. He actually got off the plane in Benghazi, and he was greeted with a hero's welcome.
Now, of course, it's not that hard to come up with a few hundred or a few thousand people for almost any point of view. And whenever we see demonstrators burning American flags and doing all the things that some of these people do in that section of the world, that does not automatically mean that every single resident of such countries feel the same way, or even that a majority do. I mean, I could, if I chose to apply my organizational skills, I'm sure I could get a few hundred people together to support almost any cause or oppose almost any cause, just because there are a lot of people in this country, a lot of people in some of these societies. Do we know that these demonstrations are, in fact, reflective of a majority or significant minority viewpoint?
I would say a significant minority. In Pew Research did a study on a most extensive study on Muslim attitudes in the United States. And the study was done about 4 or 5 years ago now, but they interviewed approximately, I think it was well over 5,000 Muslims around the country in Urdu, Farsi, Arabic, as well as English. And they found that 5% of the Muslims living in the United States stated to an interviewer that they believed that Al-Qaeda's actions in 9/11 were justified. Another 15%, Jim, wouldn't answer the question.
Let us go then to the 10th immutable law. Declining civilizations will always face superior firepower from ascending civilizations, because sovereignty is only temporarily uncontested. I must confess that of the various rules, this one I don't fully understand.
Okay. In the fall of Carthage, I show you how the Carthaginian Empire fell, and was also the rise of Rome. So the reader will learn about both the fall of Carthage as well as how Rome came to dominate a large portion of the Mediterranean, sort of unopposed. After their first war with Rome, the Carthaginians decommissioned their navy. They had enough money, Jim, to just pay mercenary sailors to sail and fight for them, and they decommissioned them. The Romans gained naval ascendancy that they never lost, and that is why Carthage could never defeat Rome from that point forward. What we have done in the last 3 years is we have decommissioned the F-22, which is the world's most superior air weapon.
But we stopped building them, right?
Sorry?
We stopped building them.
Yes, yes. I mean,
but and, we haven't stopped flying them.
We still have them. We've stopped building them,
exactly.
Correct.
Yeah.
And the thing to note is that no soldier has been killed on the ground by an outside air power since World War II. We did exactly what Carthage did in allowing the F-22 to be decommissioned.
When we come back, I want to talk about something that you might not fully understand the connection of, and that is to say that our guest, Larry Kelly, is the man behind something called the Molly Norris Foundation. We'll learn who that is when we return. Welcome back to the Jim Bohannon Show. Larry Kelly has put forward certainly a very daunting set of challenges that face Western civilization. Now, then, about this Molly Norris Foundation, who's that?
Well, Jim, thanks for bringing that up. The publisher and I are starting a foundation to fund the family of Molly Norris. Some of you may remember the Dutch cartoonist in 2006, a fellow by the name of Kurt Westergaard published a cartoon of Muhammad that touched off riots and embassy burnings around the world.
Mm-hmm.
About 4 years later, in 2010, there was the cartoon comedy show South Park.
Yeah.
Had a one of their episodes took off on that and had a cartoon Muhammad as a character in one of their episodes.
Mm-hmm.
They received so many death threats that that ran censored, and they put censored messages over the prophet's face and so forth. Molly Norris was a cartoonist in Seattle the same year. Hearing this, she put forth, as she drew a cartoon of Muhammad and also put out on her Facebook an invitation to her followers to also draw Muhammad. She called it a Draw Muhammad Day. That went viral. She was actually, she received so many death threats and also a fatwa.
Which is an organized death threat.
Yes, from this guy Awalaki, who subsequently was killed in Yemen. He was actually American born mm-hmm. Islamic right. Imam, but and killed in a drone strike.
Mm-hmm.
But nevertheless, the FBI, the Seattle FBI office, was not able to protect her. I don't know whether they couldn't or wouldn't.
Right.
And they just told her to go ghost. That meant she left her family, her friends. She had to adopt a new identity, and nobody really even knows how she's existing, what her money source is.
So about 30 seconds, suffice it to say that we have a problem. About 30 seconds to go, and I would just have to ask you, I gather you are not optimistic about the future of Western civilization.
My wife calls me an alarmist.
Okay.
I'm not a pessimist. I am an alarmist.
Okay.
I believe
that we still have time.
We have time.
But I would gather not a lot.
And we still have our freedom.
Yes, we do have that. But it would seem from going over your list that we have already passed a few of these.
We're violating a number of these immutable principles. I call them undermining factors.
Yeah.
And
well,
essentially what I'm saying
basically we're going to have to wrap on that note. Suffice it to say, the book is Lessons from Fallen Civilizations. Larry Kelly is the author. I'm Jim Bohannon on the Dial Global Radio Networks.